Well, if you were a kid listening to the radio after school in the 1930s, you were almost certain to be on the floor in front of your radio listening to Little Orphan Annie. "Adventure Time," said announcer Pierre Andre. And then the Orphan Annie theme song came on. And pretty soon Annie and her friend Joe Corntassel were off on another exciting adventure. And we're on an exciting adventure this afternoon because our special guest is that little chatterbox herself, the lady who starred as a youngster for 9.5 years as Little Orphan Annie. Welcome, Shirley Bell Cole.
Thanks, Jeff. It's wonderful to be here today. I really consider it an honor.
Well, thank you. We're pleased to have you with us. And it's so nice to be sitting up here with Little Orphan Annie. I never dreamed that I would be sitting with Little Orphan Annie. But we had a chance. I think we first met about 20 years ago in 1970.
Yes.
And
that was a radio
It was
award.
A kind of a radio reunion at Sage's restaurant in Chicago. Right. They had a big party for all the folks in radio land from Chicago.
I remember that.
And I had just started this broadcast about a month and a half earlier, and I thought I had died and gone to heaven when I was able to take my tape recorder there and meet. I met you and Captain Midnight and some people from Ma Perkins and someone from the First Nighter program and all those marvelous people, and you really were part of a wonderful community of broadcasters in that
yes,
day.
Yes, that's very true. I didn't have that much time to, socialize with people. Mm-hmm. First of all, I was a kid, and what do they want mm-hmm. anything to do with a kid? Number one, but being in school and trying to make my schedule come out to leave school a little early in order to get down in time for rehearsals. I would kind of do some homework and rest time and then scoot on back home and have dinner and do the rest of the homework and go to bed. You know,
that went on
5 days a week.
Were you a good student?
I hope I was. Mm-hmm. I tried to be.
What you probably eliminated mostly was playing after school, wasn't
it? Oh, absolutely. There was no time for the usual childhood recollections, and I'm sure I missed that a great deal.
Orphan Annie went on the radio in Chicago about 5:45, wasn't it?
5:45 was the established time, and it was the time. In fact, when the show went network, we did two shows a day. Mm-hmm. We did a 4:45 for the East Coast, and then local show or Midwest show at 5:45.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the West Coast? Did it appear?
West Coast didn't happen right away. That was later on, perhaps 5, 6, 8 years later. We started doing recordings for the West Coast so that they could run it simultaneously with the 5:45 slot. With a time difference.
And
there.
It was Ovaltine all the way.
Ovaltine all the way.
How much, everybody here wants to know, how much Ovaltine did you drink in those years?
Not much. I didn't, mostly because I didn't need it. I was Miss 5x5, and I figured I really didn't need it. And besides that, I liked the chocolate better than the malt, and the chocolate came out later.
Oh, that's right. Well, you had when you did have the Oval Tea, you probably drank it in one of those Orphan Annie shake-up
mugs. Oh, absolutely. There's no other way.
We're going to take you back, and our listeners back now, for about 13 minutes to... actually, this is near the very end of the run of Orphan Annie, from about 1940. Mm-hmm. This is an isolated episode in the... in a sequence of programs known as the Black Cat Cafe series.
Yes.
This was heard on WGN locally and on the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company. We have on this show, of course, you are Annie. Alan Baruch, I think, is Joe Corntassel.
Barrick,
I'm sorry. Alan Barrick was Joe near the end of the run, okay? Pierre Andre, the legendary Chicago announcer. Now, how did he treat the kids on this show?
He was wonderful to be with. Mm-hmm. Everyone, there was such a camaraderie with everyone. You know, one thing about radio, you have a lot of inside jokes and things you laugh at during rehearsal. And everyone, all the people were wonderful. And we appreciated being part of the group, even though we obviously were being kids. We still had our share of fun.
Did they treat you like kids, or did they treat you like actors?
Well, mostly like actors. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially if you're working, mm-hmm. you follow the director just as everyone else does, and take your instructions as what to do.
Were you, when you were doing the show, were you seated or were you standing at the microphones?
You were standing.
Mm-hmm. So your microphone was lower, obviously, for you.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. true. That's true.
And so, because you were interacting with adults on the program.
Right. But we had as many as, I should say as many, we had two mics.
Mm-hmm.
Where Joe and I would be on one mic and the adults on another mic, and it was the young days of radio, really,
mm-hmm.
and it was wonderful to be part of it.
It was the beginning of the golden age.
Yes,
and we're going to hear how some of that age got golden. Now, going back to this 1940 episode, Pierre Andre's the announcer. There's a premium on this now. This is not a decoder or a shake-up mug, however. This is a premium for an identification tag and chain. Okay, we can get your initial on this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, get this, is for 10 cents and the foil seal from the new 1940 flavor, chocolate-flavored Ovaltine. This is the stuff you like better than the malt.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's Adventure Time with Little Orphan Annie.
Find out by following Angelina Carmenetti. It certainly is thrilling. And say, wasn't that exciting news we heard last time about Orphan Annie's new identification bureau? Yes, sir. Every one of you boys and girls can get in on it and get a keen-looking identification tag and chain for your very own. And so, if you missed hearing about it, listen hard now, because, boy, oh boy, you certainly want this keen-looking, oval-shaped identification tag and automatic fitting chain for your wrist like soldiers and aviators wear. It's shining gold color victory metal. Solid victory metal, so rich and valuable looking, nobody can miss seeing it when you wear it. There's a beautiful American flag on the front, and best of all, right above the flag, we're going to put your initial to show it's your property. The letter that stands for your own name. But wait till you see the other side. It has your official identification number stamped right into the metal. And remember, nobody else will have a number like yours. Because the big idea is that everybody gets a different number that's going to be registered with your name and address at the headquarters of Annie's Identification Bureau in Chicago. And then, if there's an emergency or any boy or girl gets lost, people can send into the headquarters and find out the name and address that matches up with the number on any Orphan Annie identification tag. And so it's useful. As well as so wonderful looking, you'll have everybody crowding around to see it. You can't buy these identification tags in the stores. They're made up just for Annie's friends, because she wants you to try the new 1940 chocolate-flavored Ovaltine. It's even better than last year's chocolate-flavored Ovaltine, with a new, creamy, chocolatey flavor. And it's better for you besides. Has more of those valuable vitamins and minerals in it. And so, you certainly want to try this new treat and send for your personal identification tag as fast as you can. Now, all you do is this. Print the initial you want on your tag and your name and address plainly on a piece of paper. Then, send it to Annie with a dime wrapped in all of a metal foil seal from under the lid of a can of the new 1940 chocolate-flavored Ovaltine. or plain Ovaltine. But remember, Annie especially wants you to try new, improved, chocolate-flavored Ovaltine. You send your letter to Little Orphan Annie, Chicago, Illinois. All straight? You send the initial you want, your printed name and address, and a dime wrapped in a seal from new chocolate-flavored Ovaltine or plain Ovaltine to Little Orphan Annie, Chicago, Illinois. And then Annie sends you your keen-looking automatic fitting identification tag and chain as fast as she can. Boy, don't waste a minute sending for yours. And now, today's adventure with Annie. A bomb has destroyed part of the town hall in Sunfield, and that mysterious gang of boys known as the Black Jackets is suspected of having set off the bomb. However, Annie doesn't believe they did it. And last time, she and Joe set out to trail a woman who Annie felt sure would lead them to the persons who are really guilty. And now, we find Annie and Joe still cautiously following the woman along one of the back streets of the town. Listen.
Look out, Joe.
Uh-huh.
She's turning around to look back again. Let's stop and pretend we're interested in this door window.
All right. But this is about the fifth time we've had to stop and look in windows.
Do you think she suspects we're following her?
No, I think she's just being careful.
Well, we wouldn't have to be so particular about keeping out of her sight if we were complete strangers to her. But if she caught sight of us now, she'd know we were the two kids she met back there in the mayor's office.
Oh, sure, she'd recognize us, all right.
You bet she would. Oh, we better be moving along again. She's getting pretty far ahead of us.
All right, let's go.
I think we're safe from attracting her attention as long as we stay on this side of the street and she stays on that side. And we keep about a half a block behind her.
Well, where do you figure she... Oh, look. She's turning into that place right there on the corner of Pepper Street.
So she is. Golly, that's great. That's just what I was hoping for.
You mean you were hoping that she'd turn into that particular place?
Oh, no. No, I don't know anything about the place, but don't you see? It's a cafe of some kind. That means 9 chances out of 10 that she's going to meet somebody in there.
So she's going to meet somebody. Then what?
Well, that woman tried to make us think that some boys, meaning the Black Jackets, did that bombing. And that makes me think she was trying to throw suspicion away from the people who really did it. And it makes me think that she's connected with the people who really did it.
Yeah, but...
And if I don't miss my guess, she's meeting with one or more of them in that cafe right now.
Okay. Hey, but we better slow down or something. We're right across the street from the place.
I know. Let's cross the street. There's nothing to do now but walk right in there and see what we can see.
I hope you're noticing that this is a mighty tough-looking cafe.
Yeah, from the outside, it's about as bad a place as you'll find in Sunfield. But we can't let that scare us.
Take a look at the name of it, too. The Black Cat Cafe. Rocco Roberto, proprietor. I don't much like that. Black cats stand for bad luck.
Aw, that's nonsense, Joe, and you know it.
Well, I don't like the proprietor's name either. Rocco Roberto. Sounds like an international spy or a member of the Black Hand.
Wait a minute, Joe. There's somebody coming out. Let's just wait behind this parked car until we see who it is.
Okay.
We can peek through the rear window of the car without being noticed ourselves.
Yeah. Hey, it's the woman, all right.
That lizard's in here. There's a man with her. This is going to save us the trouble of going in that place.
Yeah, but what if they come past here and see us crouching behind this car?
They're not coming past here. Quick, Gulliver. They're going to get into that car. Right in front of this one.
Well, that's a break for us.
What do you mean it's a break for us?
It's a break that they're not getting into the one we're hiding behind.
It's a bad break for us that they're getting into any car. I hadn't counted on that.
Does that upset your plan?
Of course it does, Joe. How are we going to follow him now?
Well, I wouldn't know. But now that the subject's come up, I'm surprised she didn't get into her car long before this.
Well, I thought of the possibility that she might. But after she walked 4 or 5 blocks, I figured we didn't have to worry anymore about that.
Well, there they go in a big black sedan. And a mighty fancy-looking one, too.
Oh, golly, think. Joe, think of something to do. We can't let him get away from us like this.
I don't see how we can prevent it. We can't chase him on foot.
Of course not.
Maybe we shouldn't have tackled this job of trailing that woman all by ourselves.
I still don't see why we couldn't have the chief send one of his men with us. The chief believed her story, Joe. He thought she was on the level. If we waited to convince him that she wasn't, she'd have been gone before we could have got on her trail.
Well, I guess there's something in that. But if we had a policeman with us, he could commandeer any car along the street here and we could follow that sedan.
Well, we haven't any policeman with us. We're all by ourselves and we'd let a swell lead on that bottom get away from us. I'll bet you anything we'd have that crime practically solved if... Oh, suffering sunfish. We even forgot to notice the license number of the sedan.
Hey, look what's coming here. A taxi.
Oh, golly, so it is. And empty, too.
But this is luck. There aren't more than half a dozen taxis in the whole town.
I'll say it's luck. Hey there.
Do you want a cab?
You bet we do. Come on, Joe, pile in. It's lucky the mayor gave us some expense money.
I'll say. Turn right here at the corner, driver. North on Pepper Street. There's a black sedan someplace up there ahead of us, and we want you to follow it.
The sedan has a big start on it, so you'll have to go like the wind if we're to catch him. And we got to catch him. It's terribly important.
Okay. I'll do my best.
There he is, driver. See it? About three blocks down the street.
I got my eye on it. You want me to catch up with him, is that it?
No, don't catch up with him. Get within about a block of him and then just follow him.
Okay.
Say, Joe, do you notice where we're going? Pepper Street turns off into the old North Road up there. If we keep going this way, we'll be heading out of town right past that old house.
Yeah, right past the Black Jackets headquarters.
Black Jackets? Black Cat Cafe? That's kind of strange. Say, what do you know about that cafe back there, Mr. Cab Driver? That Black Cat Cafe?
Well, I can't say as I know anything about it. I've never been in there.
But you must be pretty well acquainted in this town, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I know most parts of this town as well as I know my own family. But that Black Cat place has always been kind of mysterious. Hardly ever see anybody going in or out of the place. And when you do, they're strangers.
Oh, do you know Rocco Roberto that runs it?
Wouldn't know him if I saw him.
Keep right after that sedan, driver. We're gaining on it.
Yeah, it won't take us long to catch him at this rate.
This is likely to be a long chase, Annie. They might be on their way to another town.
Well, that's possible.
How far are we going to follow them?
Well, we can't follow them to New York City or anything like that. We'll keep after them long enough to get their license number anyhow.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, here we go past the town limits already. There's the old house up there on the hill.
Yeah. The Black Sedan is passing it right now.
Yeah. We're close enough to them now, driver.
Hey, just jumping, Jenny. They're not passing the old house. They're slowing down.
The lizards, they are.
They're stopping there.
No, what? Turn into the side road, driver. Quick. Swing around the corner here and stop.
Yes, ma'am.
Boy, that sure took us by surprise.
Yeah, a few yards farther and we wouldn't have had any place to turn off the main road. And then they'd have seen us for sure.
Well, we're all right now, though. This hedge that runs along here will shield the cab from being seen.
Yeah, but it keeps us from seeing, too. Come on, let's get out.
Just let the meter run, driver. We'll want you to take us back to town.
Okay.
Let's climb up here to the top of the bank where we can peek over the hedge.
Yeah, we'll get a good view of the old house from there.
This chase is getting more mysterious by the minute. That woman tries to throw suspicion on the Black Jackets. Now, she and that man are driving right up to what we believe is the Black Jackets' headquarters.
It sure doesn't make sense. Hey, look. The woman and the man are walking up the path toward the house.
Yes, sir. That's just what they're doing. They're walking right up to the door of the old house and...
they're going right in.
Great Gulliver. Walking right in without knocking or anything. Just as though they lived there.
Well, this sure beats me. Maybe that old house isn't the Black Jackets' headquarters after all. But who are the boys Lieutenant Bushmill saw going in there? And who threw the rocks at us when we tried to go into the place?
I don't know any of the answers, Joe. There's certainly something awfully strange going on. Well, I think we've done as much as we can by ourselves.
But what do we do next?
Call up Chief Bailey. He's been itching to raid that old house. Well, the time has come to do it. And the sooner, the better.
Say, Annie and Joe had figured that woman to be an enemy of the Black Jackets. And yet she and that man have gone into what we all thought was the Black Jackets' headquarters. What in the world does it mean? And don't forget, here's the way to get your beautiful personal identification tag and chain. Just print the initial you want on your tag and your name and address on a piece of paper. Then send it with a dime wrapped in a metal foil seal from under the lid of a can of the new chocolate-flavored Ovaltine or plain Ovaltine. And send it to Little Orphan Annie, Chicago, Illinois. All straight? Get busy right away. Now, this offer is good in the United States only. Well, Annie is going to call Chief Bailey and tell him to go ahead with his raid on that old house. Tomorrow's adventure is sure to be an exciting one. Now, don't miss it. Until tomorrow, this is Pierre André saying goodbye.
Little Orphan Annie broadcast an isolated episode in the long-running series from 1940 starring Shirley Bell as Little Orphan Annie. And Shirley Bell is our guest this afternoon on Those Were the Days from 97 FM. This is WNIB in Chicago. I'm Chuck Shaden. A special afternoon, and we'll get back with our very special guest in just 1 minute. Our guest is Little Orphan Annie. Shirley Bell Cole is with us this afternoon in the Kraft Theater here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Shirley, you were signing autographs through the entire run of that Orphan Annie episode.
Well, that was fun. I liked it.
And there's lots more people here who want to get your autograph. And I saw everything from Orphan Annie sheet music to books about Little Orphan Annie to records.
And a lot of those things I haven't seen, so it's new to me.
In the museum this afternoon, for the next several weeks, as a matter of fact, there is an exhibit of Orphan Annie decoders and badges and manuals and all that. We brought one of the display cases here into the Kraft Theater, and there's some more out near the Pierre André studio across the museum from the Kraft Theater. But all of those things were designed to build interest in not only the radio show, but in Ovaltine.
Oh, of course. As I said to you a little bit earlier, they didn't have the Nielsen ratings as they do today to determine program popularity. And so the way they did it was to create a gimmick, a secret decoder, a giveaway of whatever it might have been, to determine how many listeners would write in for these things. And this way they determined the size of the audience.
It didn't help hurt the sale of Ovaltine either.
Oh, no. Of course not. After all, you had to have that seal.
Yes, they had 30 million kids listening in, and each one had to have two inner seal rings from two jars of Ovaltine. That's a lot of Ovaltine,
right?
To go in there. Before we took time to listen to the radio show, you were talking about your routine. Now, you are a Chicago area person all your life.
Yes, right.
You grow up in Chicago.
Born and raised in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts did you live as a youngster?
As a youngster, I lived in Logan Square, and then we moved to the South Side in the Hyde Park area, lived there until I started working on Annie, and then we moved north about 3200 north. It's around Belmont.
Mm-hmm. How did you get the job of Little Orphan Annie? It has to be one of the most enviable jobs in radio.
Well, I think it was, particularly because I was kind of a pioneer in radio before the days of Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the 1926, if I may date myself, I did a little thing of musical recitations on WENR with, Everett Mitchell.
Oh, I'm sad to report that Everett Mitchell died last night or this morning. He was 90 years old, he was the man from the National Farm and Home Hour for so many years, and he was the man who said, "It's a beautiful day in Chicago," and I learned of his passing this morning at the age of 90. And you're right, he was a pioneer in radio,
too. He was a pioneer. He had this program, he and Erna Phillips, who played the organ. Had this program on Friday nights, and they invited kids down or anyone who wanted to perform, to sing or whatever that would be acceptable on radio.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for quite some time. From that, I did all the children's parts that were necessary if they ever came up in a series on WGN. They had a group called the WGN Players. And if they needed a boy, a girl, I guess in those days one wasn't too discerning as to what the voice might be, I was it. There was no talent source in those days.
Were you getting paid for that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But when you started with Everett, you were an amateur, right?
No, that was right.
And that's how that got you into the the eye of the producers, directors?
But at relating to Annie, I was out of circulation, so to speak, for about 6 months when they started casting for Annie and Joe and the whole cast for the program. And ultimately, they located me. They must have auditioned hundreds of kids. But they didn't have a talent source, as I say, as they do today, and which began later on in years following. So by the time I was located, I was called in. I read for the part. I did whatever, I presume, what they asked me to do. And it was mine. I don't think whether the fact that I could read and follow direction was as important as the voice. I had the voice they were looking for, and it was my good fortune to have it.
A little breathless, but with authority.
Oh, that's, very much with authority. Annie was and is like unlike any child that you might know, because she could solve all problems. She never had the problems of being naughty or whatever that all parents have with their kids. But she was the example. She was the heroine that all kids looked up to. They wanted to be like Annie. She could go places and do things and solve problems, and she never got into trouble, as kids do.
So there was a real adventure figure on radio who the youngsters could look up to.
Oh, absolutely.
And in the 1930s, all the girls at home had a chance to listen and identify with Little Orphan Annie, and the boys, of course, with Joe.
But now you had a certain age group. Annie, I think, appealed to the younger child. I would guess offhand from, say, 6 to 9 tops. And then they'd go on to more adventurous programs to listen to, the Captain Midnights and Jack Armstrong and shows of that nature. But Annie was better for the younger child. And
actually, Annie fell victim to the tumultuous events in Europe as the world situation was heating up in the late 1930s. I think Ovaltine was looking for someone to be a little more adventurous, and that's where Captain Midnight came in on the scene. When Ovaltine, as I understand it, when Ovaltine finally put an end to the sponsorship of Little Orphan Annie, the show continued for a short while, but then didn't.
The sequence of events was I played a part of Patsy on Captain Midnight.
You did.
That I've heard you run. She's a teenager with this other young man who were cohorts of Captain Midnight. Annie, unfortunately, was dropped without anybody being notified. And we kind of thought, well, maybe we'd stand a chance for the Midnight thing. But logically, of course, it wouldn't make sense because of the voices. But that's what happened from my end of it.
So then that was the end of your radio career, or what did you
do
after that?
Well, no. I wish I had been more experienced in other kinds of roles, but doing Annie all those years, day in and day out, and not thinking ahead, unfortunately, I wasn't that prepared. It took me a while to get some material together and to do commercials and work on other shows. My work wasn't extensive, but at that time it was quite enough for me.
You were still, by this time you were probably in high school at the end of the Annie run?
Oh, I was out of high school by then.
You were out of high school.
Right.
So it was almost Big Orphan Annie at that time.
Oh, yeah.
So I would assume that maybe some of your interests were changing, too, from
yes,
from
well, you know, they tried to do Annie out of New York, and they wanted me to come there. They would they were agreeable that I would commute, that I wouldn't change my home base. But as things worked out, I had just met my husband-to-be, And the combination of events and circumstances, I decided to pass it. And they tried to, the show did go on. I think it lasted perhaps 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then it folded.
And Ovaltine just kept going on with
Ovaltine
secret
kept
decoders
on
and
with
shake-up
Captain
mugs
Midnight.
With Captain Midnight.
Right.
Captain Midnight, incidentally, was a local broadcast on WGN sponsored by the Skelly Oil Company. Mm-hmm. And it was on a more or less a WGN regional network. And then when Ovaltine changed from Orphan Annie to Captain Midnight, they started with the origin of Captain Midnight from the beginning, and then on they went. And Captain Midnight was just made for World War II because he was fighting Ivan Shark, a dangerous Nazi spy, and all the other folks like that. Now, some of the villains that you came across were pretty tough people, weren't they?
Oh, of course. You know, they were all out to get Annie and to foil her plans, and she and Joe were out to foil their plans, and sometimes Daddy Warbucks got into the act, but usually it was Annie and Joe, and they were left to their own smart doings, and they handled everything.
Now, it's amazing that Annie and Joe would go off on some of these adventures, never straying too far from the silos.
Right. Corners was the town.
Simmons Corners, right.
Right.
And now, describe the silos. Who were the silos?
The silos apparently were friends of Daddy Warbucks. Mm-hmm. They didn't get into how they became friends. But when Daddy had to travel, and he traveled all over the world, he would leave Annie with them, and she would go to school with the other kids, whatever. They lived mm-hmm. on a farm. And she went through a normal routine as a little girl. But Annie, really, she wasn't a little girl. She was an adult in children's clothing.
Mm-hmm. That red dress, right?
That red dress, right.
Now, you said when you sat down before we went on the air, you mentioned to me that we have some photographs here that Shirley Bell is signing. And it's a publicity photo of Little Orphan Annie taken back sometime in the 1930s. And you wore a wig for the photo, the Annie wig, and you say you still have that wig.
I still have the wig. It's I've restored it. Mm-hmm. It was so flattened in a shoebox, and I came across it one day, and I figured, well, now this deserves more than what it's getting. So I took it to a beautician, and she was able to bring it back to life. And now I have it on a wig stand. Mm-hmm. And
someday,
can't happen again.
Someday that wig belongs here in the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
That's true.
Okay.
That's
don't true. You think that would be something to have here? I've got a little surprise for you. You were probably the first performer to bring the comic strip Little Orphan Annie to life on radio. I don't think Little Orphan Annie ever did anything in the movies until they made the movie version of the Broadway show, Annie. Yeah. But the show, Annie, has just opened at the Drury Lane Oakbrook Terrace Theater in the Chicago area. And the role of Annie is played by a young actress by the name of Erin Simpson. And she is here today. So I'd like, Erin, would you come up and say hello to Little Orphan Annie? This is Erin Simpson. Annie, meet Annie. Hi, Erin.
Hi.
How are you today?
Fine.
We're glad you came down to be with us. You heard Shirley talking a little bit about herself when she was a youngster playing Little Orphan Annie, and you're a youngster. You are 12 years old?
12.
And are you from the Chicago area?
No, I'm from Houston.
From Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you come to town with your parents?
Well, people switch off. Like, one day my grandparents come up, another day my mom does. They just switch off.
How long have you been in show business?
Since I was about 6.
Wow. What have you been doing?
Well, I belong to a theater school in Houston, mm-hmm. and we just put on shows there 3 times a year. But we do shows to public audiences mm-hmm. once a year in the spring, and we just did Annie, and I was Annie.
Oh, well, we guessed that. Yeah, you are in your. And she is in. And for the, I've moved the microphone over so the listening audience can see this better. But she is in the red dress with the white collar and the white cuffs on the sleeves, and she has the nice red Annie hairdo. Is that a real hairdo? Is that your real hairdo?
Oh, no.
You're really bald, I guess, aren't you? Huh? How do you like being Annie?
It's a lot of fun. It's a weird character.
Is it?
Clay.
Why is she weird?
She has a lot of emotions,
mm-hmm.
You know, because when she does get her parents, she doesn't feel happy about it, and mm-hmm. she doesn't know why she doesn't feel happy. But she realizes that Daddy Warbucks was what she wanted all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But now she has her parents. So it just, it's all weird.
But it all works out at the end, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You have a good time playing the role?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's a big cast, I understand.
Yeah, it's a cast of about 30, 32.
Mm-hmm. How much rehearsing did you have to do before the show opened?
Well, we rehearsed 2 weeks, mm-hmm. For 2 weeks, 6 days a week. 8 hours a day, about.
Wow. Is it tough to learn your lines? Now, you were doing this in Houston,
I did
too,
it in
right?
Houston, mm-hmm. So I already knew all the lines, mm-hmm. So I didn't have to rehearse the lines.
Was it difficult working with a different cast in the Chicago area?
Well, it not really. It was a little, because the blocking is all different.
Mm-hmm.
But the only...
Was it in the round in Houston? Or is it in...
No.
It's a proscenium stage here at Drury Lane.
Yeah, it's the same as in Houston.
Uh-huh.
But in Houston, it's an outdoor theater.
Oh. Did you ever get rained on out there? Did you?
Yeah.
What happens to those
there's like
curly
a
locks?
Well, we're undercover.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So, but everyone else gets rained on.
So the audience is all wet in Houston.
Yeah.
Well, not at Drury Lane in Oakbrook, though. That's good.
Yeah.
What about, how is it to work with a dog? Sandy.
That's weird.
Is it?
That's weird. Because you never know what the dog's going to do.
I can imagine that.
Like, she may go on
That's
a
it.
Set
she may
that
go, right?
She just may go. Yeah. Or she'll go on a set, or she'll walk off stage, mm-hmm. or she'll do something she's not supposed to do. Either that or she's real sleepy,
mm-hmm.
and she just sits there, you know, looking like she's dead. And you're singing is optimistic song, and you're not singing to anything. It's like you're singing to a wall.
Can't even wake her up.
Wake her up.
That's the joy of being an actress, right? That's the challenge of being an actress. You look forward to a career in the theater, on the stage, in the movies, on television, all of those?
Well, just on stage.
On stage.
I like the stage because I like hearing audiences applaud for you and stuff. But I don't want to... Movies, they just seem... You know, there's no excitement. You have to follow the script. If you mess up on stage, you can just improv and do your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in movies, they cut, and you know, you have to do the scene over and over again.
Have you
instead of just going straight through it and then go home and eat and go to sleep?
Have you, and read the script for the next day.
And read the script for the next day.
Have you messed up at all on the stage?
Yeah, little things, not anything big.
Does it? What happens if someone gives you the wrong line for a cue? Are you able to improvise?
Well, that happened last night.
Oh, yeah?
Someone gave me a line, and the next line is about something that they just said. And mm-hmm. so I was waiting for him to finish the line, but he never did.
Well, what did you do?
I just said my line. Thinking, hoping no one would have heard them.
I guess you just have to go on, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you're getting a very wonderful response from audiences out at Drury Lane Oak Brook Terrace.
Yeah, we're getting pretty good response.
And nice reviews. Both the Tribune and the Sun-Times had excellent reviews. And there was a beautiful photograph of you in the Tribune the other day. And I think the camera doesn't lie, right? She's a beautiful young lady. Now, the Broadway show, the musical show of Annie, is a musical, surely. And there really was no music in the original radio program, except, of course, that Orphan Annie song, right?
Right.
Now, I think that you probably have kept that at your beck and call for all these years. So Would you like to sing that song for us?
Hi.
Shirley Bell. We really want to hear Shirley Bell sing the Orphan Annie song, don't we? Huh?
Just straight,
just
cold.
No a cappella. Just go right ahead and do it. Right. Shirley Bell, original radio Orphan Annie, singing the Orphan Annie song.
Who's the little chatterbox? The one with pretty auburn locks. Who do you see? It's little Orphan Annie. She and Sandy make a pair. They never seem to have a care. Cute little she, this little Orphan Annie. Bright eyes, cheeks of rosy glow. There's a store of healthiness handy. Mite size, always on the go. And if you want to know, arf, says Sandy, always wears a sunny smile. Now wouldn't it be worth a while if you could be like little Orphan Annie?
All right, how about that? Well, Aaron, how do you like that? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very good.
Now, you sing every night in this show, don't you?
Yeah.
And there's a big song, probably
yeah,
the biggest song in the show,
sing to the dog.
That you sing to the dog. Would you like to sing a little of that for us?
Okay. Just a little.
Here's Aaron Simpson singing a little bit of the hit song that she sings to Sandy in the musical production of Annie.
The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my chin and grin and say, oh! The sun will come out tomorrow, so you gotta hang on till tomorrow. Come what may, tomorrow, tomorrow, I love ya, tomorrow, you're only a day away.
Very wonderful, very wonderful. Boy, the Musicians Union are going to come after us today, aren't they? Thank you, Aaron. That's wonderful. That's very nice. I think that you couldn't spend a better couple of hours than going out to Drury Lane, Oakbrook Terrace, and see Aaron Simpson in the current production of Annie. We thank you very much for stopping in today. You stick around because we're going to ask our audience for some questions, and maybe there'll be
okay,
a question or two for you, too.
Okay.
And Shirley, you too. So nice.
My pleasure.
How lucky can a guy get, huh, to be at the same spot with two Orphan Annies in one afternoon? That's really something special. Our guest is Shirley Bell Cole, who starred on radio as the original Little Orphan Annie, and joining us is the star of the current production of Annie at the Drury Lane Oakbrook Terrace, Aaron Simpson. And we have a very nice audience here in the Kraft Theater at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And we know that there are some folks out there in the audience who might have a question for either one of these Little Orphan Annies. So our erstwhile friend and standby announcer here, Mr. Ken Alexander, is going to go into the audience. If you have a question, raise a hand, and Ken will stop by. And there's a lady in the balcony, Ken.
Actually, in the first row, Chuck.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. It's just the thrill of my life to be able to see you today, Miss Bell. I just wondered what schools you attended in Chicago, and how did the students that you played with, how did they view you?
Well, I had lots of friends, but I didn't have time to socialize with them because, obviously, I had to leave school early and go down to work. Before Annie, originally I lived in Logan Square, went to the Avondale School. Then we moved south to the Hyde Park area. I went to Kosminski School. And when we moved north, I went to Nettlehorst. And then on to Lakeview High. So,
Lakeview High School was a famous school for some Chicago people. Walt Disney, I think, went to Lakeview, and Edgar Bergen went to Lakeview.
Right.
And Shirley Bell went to Lakeview.
How about that?
Aaron, too bad you didn't go to Lakeview. You might as well pack it up now. By the way, well, thank you for that question, and stick around because we want to give you a couple of tickets to see Aaron in Annie at the Oak Brook Terrace, at the Drury Lane, Oakwood Terrace, okay? Another question?
I have a question from the book here. It says that you did one part of Sandy on radio, and there were two other people that did the other part. Could you go
That's
into
right.
that a little bit?
Sandy was cut up, so to speak. He came in three parts. Someone barked, someone growled, and I whined. Often, Annie had a monologue with Sandy. She'd say, what do you think, Sandy? Should we go there? And he'd go, like he really could answer, you know. But that's what we did.
Okay. We have some tickets for you, too.
Mrs. Bell, Mrs. Cole, I'm sorry, we've already spoken, but I did want to say that the word was asked before whether you were able to get along with the bad guys on the show, and I wanted to say that I remember that you always beat my father every time.
Your father was on the Orphan Annie show?
Yes, he was the villain.
What was his name?
Ralph Schulman.
Ralph Schulman. You remember
yes.
the villain Ralph Schulman?
Yes.
What kind of a villain was he?
He was a villain in any program he was on. He was a bad guy on many other programs also, but he was steadily on Little Orphan Annie. And it didn't matter what country she went to or Daddy Warbucks went to, if it was an Indian or Chinese or African, my father was always the one that caused the trouble and always got vanquished in the end.
Well, he raised a nice daughter, I would think. There's some more questions out here. Ken, if you'll take the roving microphone. If you, we'll see that you get some tickets to see Annie, too.
Okay. Did the character wear off on you? Did you feel you have to play the part of Annie in your school days or your normal part? Was just
not really, because unlike Annie, I kept growing and growing up. And so my thinking wouldn't have been at her level, you know, practically speaking. But it was easy to project and imagine what she would do. And if you couldn't come up with an interpretation of what was needed at the time, the director of the program would always lend his help and help you to interpret the line or the thought or that kind of thing.
Sure. Is that enough? Do you have anything else? Shirley, what did your classmates, your school chums, think of you being on the radio as Orphan Annie? Or didn't they know?
Oh, they knew, because I always had to leave early, and they wondered who she is to be a privileged character, you know. But we were all friendly. I still have my grammar school graduation picture, and I'll point out this one and that one and so on. And we had fun. At recess, that was my limitation because I had to leave early. So,
did they resent the fact that you left?
I don't think so. I think they understood that this was a job and I had to go down and do it.
Mm-hmm. So you were just a regular kid then?
Oh, sure.
Aaron, how about you? What about your friends? You're going to you actually go to a school where it's a kind of an entertainment attitude at the school, right?
Yeah, it's an after school thing. I go to a normal school during the day, then on like Tuesdays or Thursdays. On Mondays and Wednesdays, I'd go down to the acting school.
I see. So, of course, there all the kids are into acting and all that.
Yeah,
so they
know everything.
And the kids in the regular school are a little more sophisticated today, perhaps, than they were back in the days when we were kids, Shirley.
No doubt about it.
They're very much aware of all of the showbiz scenes so much, aren't they?
Yeah, a little.
What do you like to do at school? What's your favorite subject? What do you excel in?
I like math. I like math a lot, and I like English. Those are really... And I like recess. That's fun. And lunch, and then after school. Those are really the only...
Those were my three favorite subjects, too. Recess, lunch, and after school. Ken, another question?
Gentleman came in from Michigan to see Those Were the Days. Chuck?
Hello, Miss Bell. I'd like to ask you some questions about the cast. I would like you to tell me if the music, I believe it was Jesse Crawford at the organ, but I'm not sure. If the music was recorded or played live at every performance, and was there doubling done by some of the actors? And also tell us something about Joe Korntassel, and if you and he were personal friends, and if he did other radio work too.
Well, let's see. We'll start with
the music.
The music. The music, for the most part, in the early days, was live. There was Len Salvo played the organ. There was another WGN. Who was the staff pianist?
Al Turner.
Well, Harold Turner was on the organ at WGN.
Yes, he too. The song, the theme song of Annie, was an original written by a man named Del Owen when the show first mm-hmm. started. It was sung by Lawrence Salerno. He was on staff at WGN. Later on in the series, they eliminated the song, the vocalizing of the song, and the lyrics, and just used the music as the background mm-hmm. in cadence with the train whistle mm-hmm. and the airplane and those things. They all became a signet of Annie.
All the excitement generated.
Yes, the travel,
the
right,
you know?
Right. But Pierre Andres was our announcer from the beginning, and he stayed on, as we all did, till mm-hmm. the end of it.
Job security for 9.5 years, huh?
Yes, mm-hmm. till options came up.
Well, what about the options? Did they renew this every
13 weeks?
13 weeks.
We had mm-hmm. renewal time, and for those of us who needed the money, we worried from time mm-hmm. to time because at the end of the show, that summer of 1940, we were not given any notification mm-hmm. that the show was not going to be renewed. We figured, right. In fact, that summer I took my first vacation ever. In all the years I worked, and took a driving trip out to the West Coast with my family.
Did Annie, the show Orphan Annie, run through the year, through the summer, too?
Yes.
52 weeks
yes.
a year? 5 nights a week, 52 weeks a year? Did you ever get any time off?
No. Mm-hmm. Unless I was so sick that I couldn't open mm-hmm. my mouth.
And then what would they do?
Off.
Would they bring in
Well, sometimes they'd rewrite. I can mm-hmm. only recall one time where they had to bring in somebody mm-hmm. to substitute because it was impossible to rewrite the script at that point of time.
And do you remember, did the audience know that? Did they recognize that?
I don't recall, really.
Didn't hear anything about it. What did you hear from the audience?
Oh, I have some boxes full of fan letters mm-hmm. that came in over a period of time that were sent on to me by the ad agency, and with sponsors, you do your job, and if you do a good job, that's great, and if you don't do as good a job as they want you to do, then you hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as children, I found that was, in retrospect, that was unfair for kids, you know, because everybody needs that pat on the back in what they do for that length of time, especially in being a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
But we were troopers. We did what we were supposed to do.
So the recognition came when they renewed you every 13
oh,
weeks.
Oh, absolutely.
So that, in other words, that was the agency and the sponsor's equivalent of a pat on the back.
Yes.
But you know, in any kind of life, in any kind of a job, you can get a salary increase, and you can get the cost of living increase, or whatever it is, and the bonus. But if it comes without the boss stopping once in a while and saying, "Hey, you're doing a nice job," it's not the same. You know, you need that. You
well,
need
it would
that
be like Erin when she finishes a performance. I'm sure somebody turns to her and says, "Hey, that went great. Good show," right?
Yeah, the sure. cast does.
Sure.
You and sometimes the director. If he's in a good mood.
If he's in a good mood, right.
Erin, how much does the director have to do with the show once it's up and going?
Well, we have a week of previews
mm-hmm.
to make changes in the show, and he's really there for just that week, and then on press night. On the press mm-hmm. night, then he's gone. So... And he's also there. He's just there for a few weeks to
so he doesn't
block
have any
the show
policy.
And mm-hmm. then to see how it's going and make changes that need to be changed.
So So is it like when you know, a substitute teacher is there and the regular teacher is gone, and then you kind of relax a little bit and take it easy?
Yeah.
And then what if the director comes in unexpectedly some night and he sees a little shabbier show? Then he's not so nice, I guess, right?
Well, he sits down with you and he talks about changes, and then that makes you real nervous. I have to admit, it makes you real nervous because you're afraid, like, what's going to happen? Are they going to fire me? Are they going to have my understudy do the show now? Mm-hmm. You just get real scared. You don't know what's going to happen.
Do you have an understudy for the show?
Yeah, I have two understudies.
And they're both in the you got a lot of kids in the show, right?
We have 9 orphans.
Mm-hmm. So one or two of them are understudy for you?
I have an understudy, then I have an understudy for the understudy.
What is it? How does it feel to know that there's a couple of people out there hoping you're going to break a leg, you know, or not be able to come in one day or something?
Well, my understudy, my two understudies are real nice.
Mm-hmm.
My understudy, Megan, she's done Annie before.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably was going to be Annie, but she's real tall. She's tall now. So, but she probably would like to be Annie, but my other understudy, she doesn't really, well, I don't know if she wants to be Annie. She wants to be Annie. I mean, a lot of people out there would like to be Annie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But some people are too tall, or some people are too short, or some people are just tight.
And you fit in that category, don't you?
Yeah, I'm somewhere in there.
How tall are you?
I'm about 4'7", 4'6",
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
somewhere around there.
So eventually you're going to outgrow the role of Annie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever grow.
If you ever
Which
grow.
Which I hope I will.
You taking your vitamins?
Yeah, huh? taking my vitamins.
Where would you like to go? How far? What is there any role in the theater, as you are aware of it, that you'd like to play?
Well, I listen to musicals all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. I don't listen to radio, like rock and all that. I don't listen to that.
I don't either.
I used to, but mm-hmm. I don't anymore when I got involved with stage. And so now I just listen to musicals on Broadway. One part that I'd really like to be when I'm older is The Witch in Into the Woods,
mm-hmm.
that Bernadette Peters played. And Eponine in Les Miserables,
mm-hmm.
and Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, and there are a lot of others.
Well, we wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you.
I think that she's probably going to do it, too, I think. And somebody who hasn't done it yet is going to write a great show just for you.
Yeah,
and then
I hope.
Watch that star rise over Broadway.
Yeah, there's one new show out that premiered in Houston, Jekyll and Hyde,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to be Lucy in that.
Okay, well,
that's
good luck.
Hooker. Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay.
That's the hooker?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, okay.
Okay.
Time change, yeah. Don't they, Shirley?
Indeed.
Ken, anybody else with some questions out there in audience land?
Oh, right at hand.
This is WNIB in Chicago, WNIZ in Zion, 97 on your FM dial. Chuck Shaden here on Those Were the Days with Little Orphan Annies, plural, today. Shirley Bell Cole and Aaron Simpson. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hey, do you have a favorite episode that comes to mind?
Oh, golly, there were so many. I can't really say that I have a favorite one. My favorites are the tapes I have that Chuck Shaden was nice enough to get for me. Those are my favorites, any way you look at it, because I had nothing previously.
You know, think about 9.5 years of this show, and most of them were recorded at one time or another,
oh, yes,
right?
Yes.
And really, we have never found all of those shows. There might be a half a dozen or more, or about that, half a dozen, maybe 8 shows of Little Orphan Annie that are in existence that we are aware of. But somewhere along the line, they're all in a holding pattern out there, you know. Somewhere along the line, we're going to find them, just like we found all those Fibber McGee and Molly and Jack Benny shows.
Maybe someone will inherit them someday from an unknown source.
Well, that may be. That's where some of these things are found. A family member, many years later, discovers amongst the items from a distant uncle and they don't know what to do with them. But they say, gee, we don't want to throw these out because they were something. And then a little light bulb goes on over their head, and they remember the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And we have a group of people who restore these things, broken discs, discs with a glass or a aluminum base where the acetate is starting to flake. These people, a couple of them by the name of Mike Stosich and Carl Pearson, work diligently on these things, spend hours and hours restoring just a half an hour show. And that's part of the operation of the museum too, to restore these programs. Ken, I got room for a couple of more questions. That's about it then.
Here's a very young gentleman here, about the same age as Orphan Annie, I believe.
excuse me. I was wondering, what radio work did you do after Little Orphan Annie, and the stage work, and et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I didn't do very much after Orphan Annie. That was in 1940. And later in that year, I met my husband-to-be, and my interests kind of changed. So, and we were married in the summer of 41, and when he went in service, I did some freelance work then, commercials, bit parts on other soap operas. And then after the war was over, we were married before the war, but we started to raise our family when he came home from service. And that's when I retired, so to speak.
Now, what size family do you have?
I have three daughters.
Mm-hmm. One of whom is here today, right?
One of whom is here, right.
And your husband is here, too?
Yes.
Erwin Cole is here, and your daughter?
Kathy Williams.
Kathy Williams. Stand up, folks. Meet the husband and daughter of Little Orphan Annie. Ken?
Lady in the third row here.
Mrs. Cole, did you make any personal appearances as Little Orphan Annie for the sponsor?
I did make personal appearances, but it wasn't for the sponsor. It was for me. No, I did a lot of personal appearances shortly after Annie began. If you recall the name of Quinn Ryan, he was a sports announcer on WGN. He and I went out together to various local theaters in the Midwest, and he would talk about sports, and I would come out and sing some songs and talk about Annie and this kind of thing. And these were the personal appearance tours that we did. So.
Okay. And there's another gentleman there.
Charlie, the studio where you performed, were there ever any live audiences, or were you back in the far reaches of Medina building?
We worked out of NBC. Initially, WGN, and then when the show went network, we worked out of NBC in the Merchandise Mart on the Blue Network. And there were no audiences allowed because, as I say, Annie grew, and the sponsor didn't want anyone to see how big Annie was getting. So it was purely what the audience conjured up in their own minds. As long as you could sound like Annie, you were Annie.
You you left school early in the afternoon. How did you get down to WGN or NBC? Did you take the public transportation or someone driving?
Yes,
you?
No. I rode the streetcars for the most part, and or the L down to the Merchandise Mart. When I was a teenager, driver's licenses weren't in effect. And an uncle of mine who was in the automobile business gave me a car, and I used to drive that to work because we started making recordings, and I had to be down at the Daily News building at 8 o'clock in the morning to record the programs that were sent out to the West Coast, all the members of the cast, not just myself. And that went on for a long time, and then we had time to kill between the recording session and the live show. And then you went over to the Merchandise Mart about 3:30, and you started rehearsing for that day's show.
So you really had about an hour and a half or so of rehearsal for the daily live show.
Yes.
Now, you I guess we talked about this briefly before we came into the studio this mm-hmm. afternoon. You did a live show at 4:45.
Yes.
That was heard on the East Coast.
Exactly.
And then you did the same live show again at 5:45 that was heard in the Midwest. And then before you did those two shows, later in the run, you would record a 15-minute show that would be played on the West Coast, probably at 5:45.
Yes.
Now, the show that you recorded, was that a different show than the one you did at live?
No. The writer of the show at the time, I don't remember who it might have been, would write, they would have sequences of adventures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the ones for the West Coast, of course, were updated. And by the time they were processed and sent to the West Coast, and they would be processed and scheduled to run in conjunction with what was going on in the Midwest as a live show.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to establish that 5:45 time,
mm-hmm.
hence the recordings and sending them to the West Coast. For a while, they did mm-hmm. have someone working out there. They had a separate cast. But I guess it turned out to be not too successful, and this is when they resorted to recording mm-hmm. it here and then sending it out there.
For many years, there was a network ban on using recordings, and in fact, Bing Crosby broke that ban in 1946 with his Philco program. But before that, the National Broadcasting Company and CBS would not permit recordings of programs, but I think they were talking about the live or the major prime time evening shows.
Yes,
it did not
yes.
apply to soap operas or after-school programs.
Yes. This was another area of broadcasting, mm-hmm. Children's programs. And Annie, I think, was the longest-running show mm-hmm. of that can be recorded of all the kids' shows that were on.
And it's amazing that we haven't got more of those programs around. But we're lucky to have the shows that we do, and we're lucky to have you around.
Thank you.
To share these memories.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Shirley Bell Cole, we're glad that you stopped in today to pay some spend some time with us and meet some fans a few years after the fact.
But, certainly my pleasure. Believe me.
I know the audience here always enjoys listening to Little Orphan Annie on the radio. And Aaron, we're glad that you came by today, too. I know that you've got a show to do tonight, right?
Yeah, two.
Two shows tonight.
One at 6, one at 9:30.
Pretty tough to do two shows in one evening?
Yeah.
You're on stage almost the whole time, aren't you?
Yeah, except two scenes in the show.
Except two scenes. So you're ready for a good night's sleep at the end of a Saturday night performance, aren't you?
Yeah.
Are you off on Sunday, or is there a show Sunday?
No, two shows Sunday.
Two shows Sunday. How many shows a week, then?
Eight.
Eight shows. At the Drury Lane Oakbrook Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody would like to come out and see you, you'd be delighted to have them in your audience.
Yep.
And I think you'd see a good show. If this young lady is any representation of that show, I know you'll see a good show. And we hope that you have a good, successful career in show business.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us today. And Shirley Bell, I know you're going to stick around for a few more minutes and sign some more of those autographs and photographs.